you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
We are back with another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. My guest is still Melanie Curtin.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Melanie is the owner of the Financial Affairs, or just Financial Affairs. Your website is thefinancialaffairs.com. And we spent the last episode talking about Form 990, myths and mistakes that nonprofits typically have around the 990. This episode, we're going to spend some time talking about budgets and audits. Isn't that right?
Yep.
So let's get started on that. Let me start the ball rolling with a very simple general question. If I'm a small to medium-sized startup nonprofit, how do I make sure I'm keeping careful track of what's in my budget?
Yeah. So you should always start the year with a fresh budget. And I often recommend a zero to base budget. So you start with nothing on the board. Budget in how much revenue you think you can generate for a year. And then add in your expenses. Especially when you're starting out, it's easier to maybe know how much revenue you can generate or where your revenue might be coming from than the expenses that you're going to need for your nonprofit. As you get bigger and as you have more stable idea of your expenses, then I would flip that and recommend you start with all of your expenses and then generate or calculate your revenue from there. So just making sure that you're tracking all of that as your actual. So, you know, whether you use QuickBooks or an accounting software for a nonprofit, making sure that you're meticulously documenting all of the ins and outs of your funds will help you to generate your budget in the following year.
Right. And so again, the next biggest big picture question is, why is an annual budget so important?
Yeah. So just like we do as, you know, individuals, we set a budget as for ourselves. And we know that, you know, we generate so much revenue or so much income as an individual. And then we have certain fixed, you know, fees like our mortgage and our cell phone bills and things like that. And so we need to make sure that we can cover all of those expenses as we go through the year. Same concept for a nonprofit and a business in general. You should have a budget to give you a framework for where you're going through for that year. It helps you to determine, you know, what fundraising events you're going to do. Can you afford a fundraising event? Can you afford to hire that new staff member that you desperately need? You know, everything like that. And I think that the pandemic really showed organizations that they need to be really careful about their budgeting and where their money is going, and, you know, making sure that they're sticking to it. I've been a finance leader for a nonprofit, and we've created a budget. And then halfway through the year, it's like, what? Where'd that budget go? It's just like non-existent. And you know, you just need to make sure that you're sticking with it. And each month, your financials are an actual versus budget to see where you are throughout the year. And just on overall, like a budget is just a really good map for you to have for the year.
Yep, I think that's right. A budget is an actual map. Is that the dog?
That was the baby.
Yeah. Did I hear? Oh, that's the baby.
Uh-huh. Could you hear?
I heard a little bit.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to, you know, I left that little five space in there just for editing in case we needed to mark the space. How old is the baby?
She's 15 months.
Oh gosh. Also little.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. It was a bad idea to get a puppy and a baby.
Oh, I'm sure it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So jumping back in. So we've referred, you know, the budget is a map, obviously. Mm-hmm. And as such, it's not a stagnant document. It's a very dynamic document.
Yes.
But what do you think of, and I know this is a hell of a segue, but what do you think about an annual budget versus a multi-year budget?
Good question. I am personally not a huge fan of a multi-year budget. And that's not to say that you can't generate them. You know, it is a good idea to know where you want to be in 3 years. And having an annual budget and a 3-year budget, that's great. You know, it gives you a framework for, you know, maybe a big goal you have in 3 to 5 years. Just making sure that, again, you keep it a fluid document. Like you said, it's not a stagnant document that you're going to create this year, and then 3 years from now, that your financial picture might not be the same. So making sure that as you go through the years, you update that 3-year budget. But it is, especially if you're starting out, it is a great idea to have a 3-year budget or a 5-year budget. You know, you're doing your business plan, you're creating, you know, your budget for the next couple of years. And that is going to give you a really good basis for how you need to grow the organization as a startup nonprofit. And even as a stable financial nonprofit, you maybe been in business a couple of years, you've got a really good donor base, you've got your expenses rolling in, having that, you know, essentially that map again of the next couple of years, but just knowing that things change, you know, nobody planned for the pandemic. And obviously that set a lot of nonprofits back to kind of square one, mm-hmm. in certain spaces. So, you know, just making sure that you recognize that and you're adjusting your plan as needed.
Right. The only reason I bring that up is because I like to encourage the nonprofits that I work with to do forecasting, mm-hmm. and combining that with the longer projection has something to do with, again, the 3-year budget is just as dynamic as the 1-year budget is. And, yes. And it has something to do with forecasting immediate trends for your nonprofits. Where do you think your services are going to be needed? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason I encourage nonprofits to at least take a look at it from a forecasting perspective, but from a financial reporting perspective, it's the 1-year budget that's critical, and you should be reviewing that often, early and often. And does in my world, I ask boards to vote on every single financial report they do. Every single board meeting, that there's a treasurer's report, and the board has to approve the treasurer's report through a vote. Mm-hmm. Is that standard practice with your nonprofits as well?
Yes.
Is that a full legal requirement, or is that just a good idea?
It's mainly just a good idea. I mean, obviously you want governance, your board needs to have governance over your nonprofit. And they should at least vote on your annual budget, you know, vote and approve your annual budget. But again, like if you're just starting out and you're a startup nonprofit, you know, your board members might not know all the ins and outs. Maybe they're new board members. And I have a nonprofit that I'm working with now that their board has never seen their budget. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes. And you're like, you know, first off, that's, you know, we need to correct that before, you know, anything. Your board needs to know, you know, what's going on or where you want to go financially for the year. And then I've worked with other nonprofits that have a budget, but they don't compare their financials monthly to their budget. And so, you know, they're just kind of rolling along and, you know, at the end of the year, when they compare actuals to budget, they're like, wow, we just completely off base. And they're like, well, you know, you need to compare monthly to make sure that you're tracking appropriately.
Right. Right. And in case there ever is a legal question, it helps mm-hmm. to be able to show somebody that the board does review this every board meeting and signs off on it. So the next item on your notes list to me said, be realistic about goals, revenue, expenses, and staffing. We've sort of already touched on that, but how does a nonprofit get to be unrealistic about those things? And, you know, if you're looking at the numbers, it seems pretty straightforward to me that, I don't know, maybe I'm rationalizing, right? But maybe I can look at a number and say, yeah, that's feasible or that's not, but how does a nonprofit develop an unrealistic goal?
Yeah, I worked for a nonprofit once that their CEO was a dreamer. And that's, you know, that's the role of a CEO. You have big goals for the organization. And we were going through our annual budget process and we had, you know, expenses of say right around $1.2 million that we had firm expenses for the year. And we knew on average for the past 5 years historical data that we could bring in $1.3 million in revenue. You know, based on our actuals, we knew that that was, you know, a solid revenue goal. So that's what we had put in the budget. And when we were presenting it to her as, you know, a leadership team, she's like, well, I think that we should add in $1 million in revenue to the budget for a year.
Wow.
And you're like, that's great, you know, and I would love to have an extra $1 million of revenue. But, you know, historically for the past 5 years, we know that we can bring in 1.3 comfortably. You know, that's not to say that we can't stretch it and bring in 1.6 or something,
right.
But to add in an additional million is a really high reach.
Yeah. Just like that. It's like, yeah. How do you,
right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, if you don't have a plan to get to that extra revenue, you know, it's a really big ask for your staff, but maybe, you know, that like, you're going to have a new fundraising event. Well, you know, the first year fundraising event might not bring in as much money as you think it will. You know, sometimes it takes a while to get those events established.
Yeah.
You know, you might have a big donor, but again, you can't always count on a major donor to come through or to give as much as they've maybe pledged or promised. So just really keeping it realistic. And if you have the historical financial data, to look at that to understand where you can grow. You know, if you have a historically a 1.2 million or 1.3 million in revenue, maybe add 20%. That's a reasonable goal, you know, 20% add to your historical revenue. Doubling your revenue in a year, maybe not feasible. So
Yeah, no, exactly. So I get it. Be realistic about the goals. Don't do the pie in the sky thing. Be a little more conservative with what growth each year should actually look like. Mm-hmm. And you've also put this in your list, but it's something I was going to bring up, which is the development of the budget is not just up to the CEO and it's not just up to the board. Any smart person in that role is going to look at their staff and some of their key stakeholders to look at where those numbers should land. Mm-hmm. So does that mean I'm literally asking people in the community things about my budget, or does it all stay in the shop and I'm asking my program associates and my development director and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, I would recommend that it stays in-house. You might have one or two key trusted donors that you might, run something by, but in general, in terms of generating or creating your budget, it should stay in-house. And if you have a leadership team, they should definitely be consulted and they should definitely, you know, have a say in their budget. The worst is when an organization has, you know, they set this budget and it's a really high, you know, dreamy budget. And then they present it to their staff and they're like, okay, now go fulfill this budget. And the staff has no input. They have no say in anything. And it's hard for them to really, you know, grasp it and really take ownership of something that they had no involvement in.
Right. And it just makes sense to keep your staff enfranchised in the process. I mean, who I think it's just great to be consulted on those kinds of things.
Oh, definitely.
So, you know, we in the last episode, we talked about the 990 as being this dynamic thing that allows for good storytelling and is an integral part of how a company gets represented. In our notes for the budgets piece here, you've said use as many details as you can to paint a clear picture, but there's not really much room in a budget to paint a narrative, is there?
Again, it's a lot of financial data and it's how you interpret the financial data, but there's nothing stopping you from adding notes in your budget. I often recommend that if you're budgeting month by month, that you add in, this month we're going to hire 2 new staff members. So you understand that, you know, where the jump is in the budget for this month, or if it's going to be a lower month, in revenue or expenses or what have you, you mark that, like, why is it going to be a lower month? Historically, you know, maybe February is just, well, historically February is a low month for most nonprofits,
right?
After you've done your tax, you've closed out 1 year. So just adding that detail into the budget, you know, most of the time, 6 months from now, you've created a budget today. 6 months from now, you're not going to remember why that number was put in the budget unless you have details to support that number.
Right.
You know, most people don't remember what they did last week. So it's hard to, right, you know, remember why you budgeted a certain number without the details.
Absolutely. Can we talk real quick about what it means to do an audit and why and when we should do an audit?
Yeah. So not all nonprofits are required to have audited financials. You know, once you get to a certain threshold revenue wise, and, you know, that looks different for everybody, then you do want to consult with an auditing company or an audit firm to do audited financials. Most grants nowadays, if you're applying for grants, federal, local, state, city, anything like that, or even just a private foundation grant, most of those require that you have audited financials to go with their packet that they need for the grant documentation. And, you know, audited financials are nothing to be scared of. It's just making sure that, you know, you have an outside company come in and they're just going to review all your data, making sure that you're recording things correctly, making sure that, you know, you have a clear representation of your funds. You know, and it's also a really good way for a nonprofit to have an outside person come in and review internal controls, making sure that they're doing things correctly. You know, it's really easy to get bogged down in the day-to-day stuff. And, you know, most nonprofits are short-staffed and you have people wearing multiple hats. And so having somebody else come in and an outside perspective and say, I would change this and do it this way, or, you know, maybe this is a more efficient method, can really help to just broaden a nonprofit's horizons.
Right. I have a couple questions I want to ask, but the first is, you mentioned they may be short-staffed, or that, you know, everybody's wearing multiple hats. An audit is something that takes time to do. I mean, so is it up to the executive director to carry that ball internally? Should they budget staff time along with the budget expense of doing an audit in order to get that to happen? How do I avoid creating more of a headache for myself around the idea of getting my stuff my financials audited?
Yeah, good question. And it is a lot of work. I will 100% agree with you there. Generally, if you have a finance department or a finance person, I would say that most of the burden falls on them to get the financial documents in order. There is also the option to outsource that work. From some of my clients, I just come in and help them with the audit. You know, and I just come in and help them generate all the reports and gather all the documentations that the auditor needs. And I'm just that kind of third party communicator between the auditing company and the CEO or the ED. And that's okay to ask for help. Obviously, you'd have to budget in the extra expenses for, you know, an outside consultant to come in and help you with the audit and the audit expense itself. But it is worth it to have that extra time freedom, as you said. Right. But generally, I would say that if you have a finance person, they need to be prepared to have probably a good 2 weeks of their life consumed with the audit, you know, in the beginning, and when the auditors are asking for documentation and things like that, depending on how much they want pulled. It does take a significant amount of time for, you know, the finance person or the ED.
Right. Before that 2 week time commitment scares any of our listeners, I want to reflect on something you said in the beginning, which is, you know, the audit is not for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Not all nonprofits need to do an audit regularly. I was on one board that decided that they were not going to do an audit until their annual operating budget passed six figures. And every nonprofit has to decide where that threshold is. So 2 week time commitment, that sounds about right. You said at one point also that something about internal controls. I think a lot of nonprofits don't know what that is. Can you tell us about what internal controls are?
Yeah. So internal controls are, you know, making sure that you are properly managing your financial processes appropriately. And like we said, many nonprofits, people are wearing multiple hats in the organization. So it's hard to have a segregation of duties and internal controls for your finances. And so some of those might look like, in one nonprofit I worked at, it was just me for the finance person. So I would, you know, gather all the checks and make the deposit. And then the executive assistant to the CEO, she would then just review all of the checks in that deposit and make sure that it matched the deposit. And then she would just initial off. So it's something simple like that, but it's making sure that I wasn't the only one touching the funds coming in and that somebody else knew how much money was coming in the door and the deposits.
Right. So simple double checking kind of thing.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time. It doesn't have to be a really you know, complex process. It's just sometimes it's two people opening the mail. So you have maybe the finance person and the executive assistant, and they all open the mail and they count how many checks came in. And then, you know, that's kind of making sure that, again, you just have a checks and balance system. You know, maybe there's like I could cut the checks, but I can't sign the checks, you know, as the finance person, the ED, or maybe your development person can only sign the checks.
Right.
So just putting in some of those processes and checks and balance into the organization to make sure that there's as little possibility for fraud as possible, and that one person does not have the ability to do every single thing.
I'm glad you mentioned the F word, fraud. An audit is not just about looking for fraud, is it?
No, no, it is not. No, it's not just looking for fraud. It's making sure that, again, the organization has a clear picture of their financials and that they're recording things properly. And it's not necessarily fraud if you, you know, misrecord a donation or something like that. It's just making sure that you have a second set of eyes that come through and review your data before, you know, it goes out to the world.
My last question for you before we wrap this episode is, let's pretend for a minute that I'm a nonprofit that's going to get ready for my first audit ever. Mm-hmm. What do I have to do to have my ducks in a row before I even call an auditor?
Yeah, good question. So one of the first things you want to do is discuss with your board. Make sure that it's the right move. Make sure that y'all are ready to make the investment into an audit. You also need to, I would recommend that you have three proposals for an auditing company. So you submit your request for an audit to three different companies and have them come back with a proposal for how much it's going to be, what's going to be included, what they're going to review, just so you have a good idea of, you know, the differences. And then I would really take some time to internally review your financials, you know, review your financial data. And if you were, say your fiscal year ends 12/31, and you're going to do your first audit come March of 2022. You want to make sure that, you know, you have the entire fiscal year closed, all of your cash receipts are in, all of your accounts payable is done. You've wrapped up as much as you can of December. You don't want to get to an audit and still be closing your fiscal year. That's, you know, you're just going to already be behind the eight ball. Right. If you're closing your fiscal year and then you have an auditor trying to pull all of this data. You also want to make sure that, you know, if you have a finance person that they've communicated their time commitment, you know, so, okay, I have one finance person and I know that in March the audit's going to start. So that's probably not a great time to do a budget, you know, right. Or that's probably not a great time to ask your finance person to do extra work. You know, they are going to be committed to the budget. So just really making sure that you're organized and ready for it, is the main thing.
Yep. Right. And if you've done your job already, then most of that stuff is just merely gathering things. You don't have to actually manufacture new documents or new reports to get ready for the audit. So again, highlighting the importance of staying on top of your budget and doing the month-to-month thing already. And mm-hmm. that just makes the whole thing simpler. You know, we talked about those internal controls and stuff like that. Do those things need to be documented, that these processes need to be on paper?
Oh, yes. I would highly recommend it. If you don't already, I would highly recommend that you have a financial policies and procedures. Most organizations will have a company policy and procedures. If you don't, then I would highly recommend that you create one. But adding to that would be your financial policies. So what happens when a check comes in the door? Mm-hmm. Who touches it? How does it get deposited? Where does it go from there? How does it get recorded into your financial system? What is your financial system? How do you pay your bills? Who can sign your checks? All of those things should just be documented. And it doesn't have to be a really formal, pretty document. It can be a one-page Word document that says, you know, checks come in the door, person A gets them, person B deposits them, so on and so forth.
Right, just a simple checklist kind of thing.
Exactly. But your auditors will ask for your financial policies. And so if you don't have them documented already, I would walk through that process of documenting, you know, who does what. And also sometimes it just helps when you put it on paper to really see, oh, that could be changed. Or maybe we're doing two things, you know, we're both printing out the same report. It doesn't need to be that way. I can just do it once or something.
Right. Exactly. Good way to make things efficient.
Yeah, exactly.
Melanie, excellent stuff. Again, thank you for bringing the topic to the Snapcast today. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you, how would you suggest they find you?
Yeah, Yeah, you can always visit my website and submit a contact form at thefinancialaffairs.com. And you're more than welcome to send me an email at Melanie, M-E-L-A-N-I-E, at thefinancialaffairs.com.
Fantastic. Melanie, thank you again. Fantastic stuff. Let's hopefully we can revisit some time and talk more about financial issues for nonprofits, if you're willing. But thank you for being my guest today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.